many years ago, walking down Oxford Street in London, I noticed a department store, John Lewis. I hadn't a clue what John Lewis was. It was some kind of department store. And close to it was Selfridges, Harrods, Liberties, Habitat, perhaps. At the time, yes. So it was a in a position where it was surrounded by competition. And I looked up at the John Lewis store and I saw that it had a sign attached to John Lewis. And the sign said, "Never knowingly undersold." And that sign has continued to exist for a very long time. Now, the significance of that sign is extraordinary in the success of John Lewis. First of all, to be exact, it does not say never undersold. So it does not promise that it can never be found out. It does not, or be found wanting. There, you may actually get something cheaper somewhere else. But what John Lewis have promised by their strapline, never knowingly undersold, is that as soon as it comes to their attention that somebody else is selling this identical product to themselves at a cheaper price, they will refund the difference to anyone and they will change their price as soon as is practicable. So never knowingly undersold is a promise. And it's part of the John Lewis brand, and it's not something that John Lewis would dare change without extraordinarily good reason. In other words, it's a constant. And when John Lewis first adopted it, I'm pretty sure that it was revolutionary, that it differentiated John Lewis from every other store in its sector, and indeed led other sectors, other retailing sectors. So what is the significance of this strapline? How important is it? I don't think you can overestimate its importance. Now, if I bring the story right up to date, because that story goes back to probably the early 1970s in my life, when I was first able to walk around London and observe the different companies and how they advertise themselves. But if I come right up to the year 2013, and I bring you with me into the Web Summit in Dublin, organized by Paddy Cosgrave and Dara Hickey, which was such an extraordinary success in the world of technological entrepreneurship. And if I take you on the walk with me that I did throughout the entire exhibition, all hundreds of startups, hundreds of companies displaying their wares, trying to attract, to sometimes maybe they were trying to attract customers, others trying to attract investors, others were trying to network. So they had a space for which they had paid, and they put their company name up there. Now, it gets increasingly difficult for a tech entrepreneur to come up with a name which doesn't belong to somebody else. That's tricky. You can see that people have put an enormous amount of creative effort into coming up with a name. Although, to look at them, I have to say that there certainly were many that I thought had practically been thought up without any research to establish whether the name differentiated themselves from other competitors, or even whether the name conveyed a sense of what service they offered. But underneath, about 10 to 15% of the companies exhibiting was some sort of a strapline. So what I'm really saying is that between 85 and 90% of the companies had bugger all displayed underneath their name. So when you walked through the milling crowd, without waiting to be attracted by a stand, a stall, there was nothing there to attract you, nothing there to differentiate one stall from another in most cases. So what have modern startups exhibiting at the Web Summit learned from John Lewis? Now, most of them were born after John Lewis was born, well after that. The John Lewis Partnership, I don't remember when it was born. I haven't got time to look up in Wikipedia. But the point is, they've learned nothing. They have learned absolutely nothing. Now, if I go back 1 year, I was fortunate by accident to almost bump into Robert Scoble, I suppose you'd call him the world's most effective tech journalist, a man who can make or break a new startup by literally writing a positive review about it somewhere, or tweeting positively about it. He's very, very influential. So he and I were, he gave me an interview, or he had a conversation with me, which I recorded and put out as a podcast on the Audioboo channel. It's available to be found on Google or even on Audioboo. But Robert Scoble said to me, look down there, look at all those exhibitors, he said. How can you tell from any of them, or from the vast majority of them, what they do, what they're offering? Now, Robert Scoble didn't use the phrase brand positioning statement. That's the technical jargon that people who, you know, work in branding, just like their technical terms in anything. But a basic strapline, a basic thing to tell you what is the startup, what is the business promising. Now, I went round, and I hope he doesn't mind me mentioning him, but I went round with James Corbett for some of the time, and we looked together. So it wasn't just a cranky old man like myself going around. I had somebody with me who would have pointed out to me that I was making a great mistake. And it was evident, abundantly evident, once you opened your eyes, that the vast bulk of these companies were maybe indeed superb technologists, absolutely have invented staggering functionality that might indeed be just what the consumer of the current day, or even the consumer of the future, is looking for. What they're doing may benefit humankind enormously. But the problem was that they were not communicating their brand. They actually didn't either know what the difference between their brand and another brand was, or if they did know it, they didn't decide to put it forward. Now, I think that anybody who's helping startups in any one of the hundreds and thousands of hubs around the world should make damn sure that startups understand that it isn't all about investors. It isn't all about technology that works. At a certain stage of their life, they have to take, the startup people have to take their head out of the trough of business process development and think about how they're going to win the hearts and minds and love of consumers, whether they're business to business or business to consumers. And without a strapline, I mean, you're, frankly, you're no damn good to anybody. You're creating a problem for the consumer. The consumer is going to have to come over to you in some form or other, dig around your documents to find out what your differentiator is. Now, to be fair to the startups, every single one of them had a paragraph, you know, made up of, oh, usually in excess of 20 words, but a completely unmemorable paragraph, except to the mad raving enthusiast. And certainly if you were walking past, you wouldn't be able to remember it as well as I can remember this particular one. I think the company was called Pow Tow. And its strapline was putting awesomeness into your presentations. Now, you couldn't be clearer. I think even the word awesomeness was underlined. I mean, it hit you straight in the face. You knew exactly what they did. You knew damn well if you had a presentation to make, these people would make it awesome for you in some way or other. And they used the word awesome. It wasn't good. It wasn't superb. It wasn't professional. It was emotional or imaginative. It was awesome, is what they were offering. And that is really what differentiates it. I think they were called... I remember the strapline better than I remember the name of the company. So, I was excited by the opportunity that that presents to a branding company. An opportunity it presents for my own company, Change Agents Branding, who produce more meaningful marketing. Yeah, that's our strapline, more meaningful marketing, right? That's the best one we have been able to come up with, and we're going to nail our flag to that mast and hope that we'll be more and more successful as Change Agents Branding, more meaningful marketing. Okay, but what of the startups? What are we going to do about them? There is absolutely no way that our company can work for all these startups. We wouldn't want to anyway. I mean, only some of them would appeal to us. Only the ones that were going to produce something that was authentic and had that feel of being, you know, genuinely appealing to humans. That's the kind of clients we want to work with. But there are other companies out there who can offer you branding services. So if you're listening to this as a startup, or if you're listening to this as an established company, like, for example, let's say Barry's Tea. Now, if you look at the Barry's Tea box, now they're a very successful company, or they're a pretty successful company in Ireland. But have a look at their box and their packaging, and take a look and see if you can see what differentiates them from other tea selling companies. It's not at all clear. Okay, they've won the hearts and minds of people in Ireland. But how would Barry's Tea become successful in the UK? And how would it become successful in the US? Especially among communities that don't have an Irish-American or Irish-British ancestry and culture behind them. No, even established companies can fail to recognise the importance of their brand positioning, promise or statement. And that's why I'm making this particular podcast. I'm making this podcast to try to influence in some way some people out there who may pick up this podcast and who will be much more influential than Change Agent Branding. People who will be in a position, for example, in, I don't know, the Rubicon in Cork and various other hubs in Dublin and in Belfast and in Galway in Ireland and going beyond that into the UK. And even, to be honest, I would love to go to that huge gathering of Tech Southwest or whatever it's called in the United States, and to see how many of the companies there suffer the same problem as Robert Scoble pointed out. Such an experienced eye, absolutely knowing by looking that the companies without a strapline, without a good strapline that wasn't just picked out overnight, that wasn't just catchy and sexy, but had real legs to it, real substance to it, and which actually conveyed the true promise of their brand. Those kind of companies. And now I've forgotten my line of thought. So basically, look, people, men and women entrepreneurs, let me appeal to you. For goodness sake, change this situation. At the very least, so that when Web Summit 2014 comes around and you walk through the exhibition halls, that will change the ratio, right? And the ratio in this case, I'm not talking about Cindy Gallup's campaign and all the people with her who are trying to change the gender ratio. No, I'm talking about the ratio between businesses that have a good promise in their strapline and businesses who have, in the language of Ireland, feck all there and are hoping to succeed. Don't just think about the engine you're making. Think about what it's going to do for people you might call the end user. But in my language, it would be for the people
who are going to buy it and fulfill their dreams by buying it. So the dream fulfillment offering that you're giving to people, let that be in your strapline. Okay, that's a rant, I suppose. But I'd just like to thank James Corbett for walking around with me, my business partner Jonathan Am for sensitizing me more than any person has ever sensitized me to the importance of this. And I want to especially thank the John Lewis Partnership for the wonderful, never knowingly undersold, a great model for all of us. So this is Paul O'Mahony, co-founder of Change Agents Branding, more meaningful marketing to you, signing out and thanking you very much for listening to this, and actually saying, would you please pass this on to two or three other people who might, you think, might be interested in it. Thank you very, very much. Bye-bye.